Welcome to episode number 3 with talk with David Curtis and Kali Wisson. David lives in England. Make sure you look up his work. He's truly one of the best living fine artists today, along with Kali Wisson. And Kali actually met David in England. So this is a fun talk that we had with David. Also, jump back to episode number 1 and then follow up with number 2. Before you start listening to this one, because it'll just make more sense. So I'm super excited, and let's jump in right into the chat. David, do you enjoy Christopher Blossom's work?
Sorry, say again, Gavin.
Do you enjoy Christopher Blossom's work?
You may not be familiar with.
Yes. I don't know that.
Oh, please!
I don't
look.
Know that.
Oh,
thing.
David, you got to look. You have to look at Christopher
Blossom. I'll Google him. Yeah. I'll Google him tonight.
Yeah, Blossom.
Blossom.
Yeah. Yes.
And Tim Allen Lawson.
And
Is that going to blow my mind then?
I believe you'll be inspired. I think that's a good way of.
I will. I'll do that. To wind my day up.
Just getting back to music. I was talking with Tim Lawson. Do you know Tim's work, T. Allen Lawson?
Yeah, Tim.
I was just on the phone with him not long ago, and he said that he's having an exhibition in London. You might want to check that out.
Oh.
So we're going to be at the COP.
Christopher.
Let's see the gallery. We'll get you the name. But he's based the whole show on music.
Jonathan Cooper Gallery.
Wow.
And it's going to be coming up.
Oh, super, yeah. Yes, anyway.
Yeah. And he basically based his whole exhibition on music, various songs. So that's an interesting one to see. Some Bob Dylan to various. I mean, it goes from classical to, you know, all the way to Bob Dylan. So music.
How does that translate into composition and brushstrokes? How would that translate?
That's a good question, right? Mm. That's something that would be. I'll ask them. We'll do a podcast on that, so you can listen to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we were talking, he just said, "Yeah, this exhibition I'm doing is on, and it's called the Painted. The title's called Painted Note, I believe.
A Painted Note.
A Painted Note. That's what he titled the exhibition.
A Painted Note. Well, fortunately, in the Mall Galleries in London, we get everything sent through to us.
Yeah.
That would be off note, you know. Oh. Forgive the pun.
Check. It's in your backyard.
Exactly.
Music is so important.
I think that in the studio here, I will have music on all day long.
Yep.
From Spotify, you know, but not through my main computer.
But outside, when you're painting from life, at least for me, wouldn't you say music is everything that nature gives you? Right? It's the birds, the water, the sounds of whatever is around you. Do you agree with that? That's your music when you're painting outside, or do you?
Well, that is to me. I mean, I think these sounds enhance the feeling of the atmosphere of the day and the composition. Mm-hmm. And I think you put if it's something like a shipyard where there's clattering going off. Mm-hmm. And you can see people welding, you know, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Moving. And you know that you're going to put figures in.
Yeah.
I did one a while ago with a couple of people welding sheet steel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the crackling sound of the welding translated into the flashy light that I got in the arc, you know, the welder's arc.
Yeah.
You know, titanium white and Indian yellow, and then the sort of just cadmium orange around, just to give that sharp intensity of that. And it was the crackling sound was part of those strokes in a very tangible sort of way. Things like rustling, you know, trees, wind, and, you know, windswept trees. Isn't it better to feel the movement of a tree if there is you can hear the wind?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, the east-west wind, you know, the prevailing easterlies will send trees over to the right. And I think if you can hear that, those branches, those strokes of branches and structure is enhanced by the sound.
Yeah.
It goes back to the translation of music into an exhibition.
Yeah, you have to feel the cold, the hot, the heat, the wind.
We do have to do that, and we're used to the cold here in the UK.
Send us some of that because we're burning up in Arizona.
I bet. A funny thing you must tell you now. A couple of weeks after you left, we got this spell of absolutely divine weather in Spain. Look at this light now, and the water was still.
David is torturing you right now.
Sorry, I'm sorry about that. Yeah. And all you got was dumb metal grey, as we say.
Yeah, my heart was breaking.
Another day, another time.
Mm. But the funny thing was, because I think I might have commented on one of the little paintings you did in Stays in the Back, and just how the painting was great, the light was beautiful. But an interesting thing, just combining that happened when I got to Ireland. Lovely little dock we were painting, and I was there 2 days before. There was just the hustle and bustle of the people walking around and tourists and the locals. But when we got back to paint, there was some council workers jackhammering the concrete walkway sort of 50 yards, 40 yards from where we were painting, and we had to battle through that and trying to talk through that as you're teaching. And then the next day we were at Queen Abbey, very peaceful, tranquil, and I apologized to my class that I'm sorry, I cannot provide those melodic jackhammer sounds today. I know you're all going to miss them. Oh, boy. Talk about it. It was headache-inducing.
That's it, like banging your head against a brick wall. It's lovely when you stop, isn't it?
Yeah, so true, so true. Yeah, no, it was just amazing.
Yeah, so
actually, Gabor just brought up one of your Stays paintings. And, I was able to do a few Stays paintings. I wasn't game to actually ask you for some reference images, and Hattie was going up the week or two later, and she was able to send me some sunny day ones because I think she got a little bit of that sunny weather, and you may have caught up. She did a bit of teaching. That'd be sensational. The eternal sort of difficulty is the groupings of buildings and the way that you handle that massive information, but you make it read so well. Is there a sort of a tip that you would pass on to, because sometimes you can get those scenes in Italy and France and even San Francisco, how to paint that those big masses and groups of buildings.
I think it's described as best on one of my films of Stays, which is called The Light Touch.
Okay.
From ATV Films. I think you've got them over there.
Yeah, yeah.
But just describing it. I do it as a sort of patchwork, Colin.
Okay.
You know the bit I mean, don't you? When you look down on the harbour. And there's a pile of cottages.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, God, how do I do this?
Yeah.
If you just take the few elemental triangles and rectangles, because it's all rectangles, rhomboids, or triangles, isn't it? And if you sketch them in fairly loosely, but try and keep it correct, and then you put it in as a patchwork of light, medium, dark, tones within the little rectangles or triangles that you have originally just roughly sketching, not too intensely, and it becomes block against block against block, tone against tone against tone, and then if you just place the seeing eye of the windows sort of under the eaves, you just the two little dark little flashes where the windows are, and then some will be lit. Some would be white, and then gradually the whole thing knits like a little tapestry, like a little mosaic of blocks and triangles, without being fussy. But the thing is to do them all. This is the real key thing. This people concentrate on one bit and then the next and then the next.
Yes.
You kind of fuse it all together in a block.
Gotcha.
In a block of 10 or 15 cottages in a pile going uphill. And you do that fusion. A tone will do for the top right, middle left, bottom left, and the next tone will do that. So it all intermingles, but it actually does read. By the time you've blocked in every little triangle or rectangle correctly, as good as you can get, without fussiness, and not worrying too much, but being using the, you know, little square brushes that you use these with your lovely square strokes.
Yep, yep.
You know, it's block against block against block against block. If there is a glimpse of light comes your way, just flash those little pantile roofs, cadmium orange, maybe a little bit of alizarin and white, bang. Just bang them in when you see them.
And anything
that flashes light, stick it in quickly.
And do
it might not be there long, but if it enhances the image, the better. Hard to describe, but that film showed it.
Oh, okay. That'll be a great resource for everyone to look at and to search out. And do you use the sort of the mantra, sort of trying to put your darkest near your lightest for your sort of primary vocal area that you want?
That's a good one. That really, I draw in sketchily to start with over a tone. If it is oil, over a tone, I use a tone surface. Which is a wash of French ultra, raw sienna, a bit of burnt sienna, and then let that drip down and dry. So you cover. So that's why I showed you these boards. I think now this kind of stumble effect. Now with French ultra, raw sienna, a bit of burnt sienna, with a thin rigger brush, just sketching the composition, and then I would look to the dark passages, which are structurally important, and then I put the sky in, the sky in first, because that then is the lightest tone. But it may not necessarily be the sharpest tone, because there might be sunlight glinting off something which is lighter than the sky. But then everything else is a mix of various stages of light, middle, and dark middle tones. And that the whole thing, like that thing with the cottages, it all kind of knits together. But you're working, big important thing is working over the whole canvas, not concentrating on an area for too long.
Yeah.
Blobs of colour, passages all over to get unity.
Yeah, that's how I was always taught.
If you get a unified image, it'll read much better than something that looks
It'll look labored, basically. Overdone or labored.
Fusion. I can't help using this word fusion, which is what the tonal surface gives you. You don't get the blank, the scarily white canvas shining through. People paint differently. People don't like my method.
No.
Some do, but some people like the pristine canvas, don't they?
Yeah.
That scares the living daylights out to me. That is.
Yeah.
Then there's another medium, which is a wash, like a wash over the canvas, and then using a rag to just pick out the highlights. The rag that picks out the skyline, and then the lighter elements, and you've got a kind of monochromatic, like a Polaroid photograph developing from scratch. So that's unity as well. There are ways. There's both one way of skinning a cat, isn't there?
Yep. So true. That's the beauty of art, right? Mm. You can approach it from different angles, but come up with a great result. Yeah.
There's no ruling. There's no hard fast rules. I think you develop, you evolve, don't you? We all must have evolved.
But as you said, there has to be foundational principles down, behind all that stuff. Otherwise, it's just going to be a mess.
And appreciation of design as well.
Absolutely.
Composition. We used to say drawing, composition, drawing, tone, and then color in that sequence of importance.
Yeah. And do you work on the hard and soft edges to, because I've noticed over the years when I thought, you know what, I've pushed that value, pushed that contrast, and then sure enough, it's the edge that's the final sort of secret to get that, just to get that kick out of that value and to really sharpen up.
Well, you're the past master of that, maybe.
Yeah.
Of those wonderful edges.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, lost and found. Well, lost and found is like music, isn't it? Adagios against crescendos. It's harmony. It's a hard edge when it needs to be, and a soft edge when it's mysterious.
Yeah. Actually, just changing the subject a fraction. I would love to go on record and just say, David, your work has given me years and years, and to be able to meet you and paint with you and have time with you, that is giving me even greater pleasure, or just as much pleasure. But I just want to say your work is just divine. I know the listeners will, if they haven't heard
definitely.
Of you,
yep.
They would love to add your work to their catalogue of artists that they admire. And because, And when I mentioned to Gabor that I was catching up with you, he was so thrilled for me because he knew how much your work meant to me, and I'm sure he would have loved to have been there as well.
Known your work, so that's why.
I'm very grateful and flattered to hear that. But the sort of return goes to Polly. I mean, when I suddenly found out that you were coming to UK side, I mean, that was exactly the same sentiment.
You're too kind.
You know, what I would have seen of you. But, you know, I think we don't look on ourselves, do we? Look on ourselves as anything like special. We go to work. We're just most painters I've met are very ordinary people. They are. Everybody's ordinary, aren't they? It's just that we have this facility that is very heartening when people find it, you know, attractive. But I think we're so self-critical that we lose sight of what we might be half good at, really.
But I
sit here thinking I'm just doing a job, you know.
A daily struggle.
We're very privilege to do this job, really, and have made a living out of it. An awful lot of youngsters are trying this now because they're finding it very difficult to get a gallery or because I think there's so many. There's a good thing about painting, plein air, and everything, but there's kind of too many people at it, in a way, wanting to jump ship and make a living. I say to people, what you really need to do is what I did and get a job to start with, you know, and jump when the time is right.
Yeah,
and I worked in engineering design, going off to design to get that discipline and learn how to run a business. And then wait while you get the leads. We all need something to take us on. And I got that in 85. A gallery took me on. That lasted for 40 years, that relationship.
And do you find the gallery system in England or the UK, in Australia, it's nowhere near as strong or as good as it used to be? There aren't as many good top galleries. Is that sort of happening a little bit in England or the UK, do you think?
I think just in recent years, I think galleries have found it very hard to make a living. Quite a few really quite pronounced ones have gone to the wall. The trouble with it is the Instagram's not helped because the people are selling privately now.
Yep.
And they're reluctant or reticent about the commission rate. The commission rate can be as high as 55% in London, you know.
Wow, that's crazy.
And in the Mall Gallery, it's 45% in the Mall for members, plus VAT. So you're getting much less than half the value of the painting. And you've had to transport it there. You've had to frame it. So for £100, you might take home 30 quid.
Maybe, yeah. What was the percentage when you started out in 85? What was the split?
Gallery.
Yeah, well, my gallery was always very fair. My gallery was very fair. It was 40.
40, okay.
But they did everything. Mm-hmm. They would do a colour catalogue, mm-hmm. An opening, and, you know, the catalogue would be many
very
thousands.
Expensive, yeah.
Nowadays, if it's central London, the gallery will want you to contribute to the catalogue and the opening.
Yeah.
But they will say, if you want a West End gallery, take it or leave it, mate.
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. But there is a terrific prestige. Mm. But most galleries are around the 50 mark, I think.
Yeah. In Sydney.
But you know, with West End rates, the galleries don't make a living.
Yeah.
But equally, we have to make a living.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you sell a painting privately, this is the problem. Mm. This is the catch 22, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
People really, really want to get their money's worth out of their effort.
Yeah.
Well, the galleries made the mistake of underestimating the internet, you know, I think.
And underusing it as well.
Underutilizing it, yeah, in many ways.
They have. Because, you know, the buyer public is not as rich as it was.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know what you're like over there, but we've got a real cost of living crisis, and you know, an awful lot of people, the last thing they need on their wall is a painting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you know, we still have that old money in the country here, the collectors.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I had an auctioneer.
Yeah.
I chat with an auctioneer, and he said about 10 or 11% of the people would buy a painting, and about 5% are collectors, and that leaves a great swathe of people who really don't see the need for a painting on a wall.
Yep.
If you look at, you're right where you are, but when you look at interiors on the television here, nothing on the walls, is there? White walls
and a
mirror. You don't see. I mean, I don't know how long it is since I've seen somebody interviewed in their house, and it's a delicious painting.
Mm.
I never do. Never see it.
That's rare. Yeah.
You know?
Here too. Yeah, that's rare.
I mean, our house is festooned with painting.
Yeah.
Mm. And most of my friends have got 16 paintings on the wall. My studio here must have 40 paintings on the wall. And the house has got the same.
Yeah.
I mean, we love people's paintings. You know, you buy. I've got two Collie Wissons. Buy me.
There you go.
Anybody comes in and said, come with you, how did you get hold of those? ways and means, mate, ways and means. But it's a lovely thing. We have a lovely collection, a marvellous collection of paintings. And
great.
You walk past them every day and you think, God, I'm really glad I bought that.
Yeah.
You know, if people really saw the virtue and value of what we do more, it would be great.
Well, that's the job. That's the job of the person that represents the artist, right?
Mm.
Should be.
Yeah, they've got to sell.
Right?
They've got to
that
sell
should
you,
be,
haven't they?
Right? Yeah. So that's another conversation, David.
Sure.
Yeah.
That will be our next call.
I did another call. I'm going to say, I don't think it's as sharp as it ought to be.
Yeah.
They want to just sit there in the desk and. I mean, the salesman says you walk the pitch.
Yeah.
Car salesman, you walk the pitch to sell a car.
Yeah.
You don't just sit on your backside, do you? And we have that problem in our gallery. We don't have enough people to walk the pitch.
Well, it's the same problem here too, I think. And I'm sure Australia too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a fun conversation just in the future to talk about those things. Collie and I really want to appreciate your time, David.
Mm.
You know, I know you're
sensational.
Busy.
It's been fabulous. It's been in Florence. I did one a year or so ago with Eric Rhodes, you know.
Okay, yeah. I heard about that. Yeah,
That was very similar. It went really nicely, and the interaction with you both has been fabulous, and the it's a joyful experience to just makes good day, doesn't it?
It is. Mm. It is.
And it imparts a bit to your leadership.
Yeah, no, we love your work. You inspired many people over the years, and hope we can have other talks too. Mm. This is not the last one, so
yeah. Well, it'd be marvelous. Anytime.
Excellent. Thank you. That is so great.
So enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you so much, yeah, David.
Great to hear Collie again.
Well, Collie,
seeing you both again, Collie, just transports me back, and it's great to hear you, Gabriel, as well.
Fantastic, David. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Nice to meet you too.
Thanks.
Yeah, great to meet you audibly. But be great to meet over the table sometime or out in the field.
Definitely. Looking forward to that. So,
Okay, thanks for inviting me.
It's our pleasure.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David.
All the best now.
Catch up with you now. Next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.